This is Outstanding in the Field, a podcast by Perennia, highlighting production practices, pest management, and more for field crops in Nova Scotia. I'm Caitlin Condon, your host and provincial field crop specialist. My guest this month is Adam Pfeffer, row crop market development manager with Bayer Crop Science. Adam joins me to tackle decoding BT corn traits and shares what you need to know about target pests, resistance management, and more. Welcome, Adam, to the podcast. Thank you so much for doing this today.
Thanks for having me, Caitlin.
Yeah. So to start off, can you tell me just a little bit of background on you? Who are you? What do you do?
Yeah. So Adam Pfeffer, I'm a market development manager with Bayer Crop Science. So I guess in a nutshell, that's looking after coordinating all technical things related to those crops. For our commercial business. So all of our research work through our market development team across Canada. So I help our field team, our TSAs in Eastern Canada manage protocols in different areas of expertise, germplasm trait, which we're here to talk about today, agronomy, crop protection. I kind of cover the full gamut. And yeah, I get certainly get involved with lots of different aspects of those cropping systems across Canada, and yeah, just really trying to help bring our pipeline to life with the Canadian grower, trying to figure out how, you know, new varieties, hybrids work on growers' farms, how new traits can fit into our marketplace, what pests, disease, weeds, really just trying to bring solutions to the Canadian grower. It's a big pipeline to try and wrangle. We've got a lot going on from all the different crop areas, and yeah, certainly it's fun. You know, I do farm here in southwestern Ontario, just outside of St. Thomas. So born and raised on a greens and oil seeds farm, corn, soybeans, wheat, pretty standard. Yeah, went to the University of Guelph and started with Monsanto back in the day as a summer student and just never left. So we're over the Bear a few years ago. And yeah, it's been so much fun. Great people, lots going on. And yeah, thoroughly enjoy working with our farmers and trying to solve challenging problems for sure.
Yeah, no, that's great. You're a busy guy and you've got some, experience all over the country, but you've been out here to the Maritimes recently as well. So you can kind of picture what we've got going on out here.
Yeah, I mean, I was out there, my first meeting actually was in 2008 in Halifax. It was national business and I didn't leave Halifax proper, but yeah, it was certainly good to get back this summer. And yeah, I made the drive twice, I guess. And
yeah,
it's a long drive, but it's manageable. If you got a buddy, it makes it go a lot faster. So
sure.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful country out there. It's really interesting to see how farms are set up. You know, lots of livestock and certainly where corn's grown, you know, intense silage, grown feed for the animals. It's
Yeah,
beautiful countryside and the diversity of microclimates you guys have with valleys and oceans and
it's a unique place.
It's truly unique, yeah, and something that I have a lot more appreciation for now for sure.
Yeah, awesome. So what we're here to talk about today are BT traits, and I think there's always confusion kind of around BT traits. What do they actually mean? What are they doing? And so I'm hoping to just kind of decode some of that today. I think we'll dive right into it. And just off the top, in general, how do BT corn traits work?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And yeah, really it's a naturally occurring molecule or compound that we've inserted into corn germplasm or the genetic code to produce, BT proteins. They're used in the organic industry extensively, and really BT proteins cause gut rot, basically plug up the vascular system, the stomach tissue, et cetera, of a targeted insect and, just cause it to starve. Essentially is my simplistic explanation for it. It certainly can be a lot more technical than that. And The nice thing about BT proteins is there are a number of them. There's a vast library that's been discovered. And the uniqueness of them is they're very specific. But when you think about insect management, you don't want to have a broad BT or some other protein or something else that, is widespread death to anything that bites that plant. As much as from a farmer's perspective, I'd love something to kill raccoons or deer or squirrels or something that's, the animal tax we pay every year. It's just simply not, we don't want things like that in the environment. So yeah, the nice thing about BT proteins, they're very specific. There are a number of different ones in the marketplace. There is some relation certainly between them. Some are closely related, some are fairly distant. Yeah, they all really target different pests, and some certainly target the same ones as well. But yeah, it's technology that's been around for many decades, and unfortunately, back in the 90s, I'm sure they started work in the 80s on this concept. With European corn borer running rampant around North America, it was a huge opportunity to try and control that pest. And to date, we've done a very good job of it, which yeah, we need to continue to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been such a fantastic tool over the past 30 years. So yeah, we hope to see that continue long into the future. So some of the language that we hear around trait packages in general, but including BT traits, is above ground and below ground protection. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and what pests would be targeted?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Really the core of the above ground, below ground terminology, and we do use it extensively internally, externally. Below ground pests are predominantly corn rootworm. That pest is a corn on corn pest. It thrives on feeding on roots. And yeah, did see some adult beetles out in the Maritimes, so you guys are fortunate to have a little bit of that hanging around. So that's really the predominant pest below ground, and it's a very challenging pest. I mean, we've had resistance to a few different proteins over the last, I would say, 10 years or so in the marketplace. The US, I states especially, where continuous corn has been the common practice for many years. Ontario, we're starting to see populations of corn rootworm become resistant to our SmartStax technology and others in the market. But the above ground portion really is European corn borer is where it started. But every trait package, almost every trait package, every trait package or combination of traits controls that pest. Western bean cutworm, which, gosh, I think the first time I laid eyes on that pest in Ontario was 2009, 2008, 2009. And yeah, it's been interesting to see it migrate east. Certainly, we see lots of pressure, Eastern Ontario, Quebec, and certainly from what I observed this past summer, you guys have it just as bad as we do. So,
Yeah, I think this year was our worst year for
yeah.
a Western bean cutworm yet, and it's definitely been on the rise the past few years. So I think one that we're going to have some challenges with in the future.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then you got, corn earworm. That's you guys have that one as well. It popped up once in a while in my neighborhood. It usually comes late season, so we don't pay a lot of attention to it. You've got some armyworm species as well. Really, there's lots of lepidopteran pests that like to eat corn. Corn's a great source of nutrition. So yeah, that's really the terminology. It's take the ground level. It's what insects are below, what insects are a challenge above. And you have a trait package like VT Double Pro, which is above ground only, and then you have a trait package like SmartStax, which is above and below, where we combine all of the proteins into one package. And just being involved with the Canadian Corn Pest Coalition and looking at, the trait tables, you can find those posted on their websites. it's diverse. There's lots of different traits in the marketplace, different combinations, and everyone has a unique fit, in the marketplace for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. That I think that helps kind of give a little bit more context to that language that we see so often. You mentioned that the BT traits are very specific. They're targeting very specific things, very specific pests. So how many different BT proteins are there? And then how many of them can be present at one time in a trait package?
Yeah, that's a good question. I just went through the Canadian Corn Pest Coalition list here this morning, because there are a number of them, and there are four above ground proteins. So you got Cry 1AB, Cry 1F, and then Cry 1A, 105, and 2A, 2AB. Those two are together in our double pro package. So yeah, it's really four key proteins above ground, and then below ground pest pressure. Below ground control, you've got four proteins there, plus our new RNAi technology with SmartStax Pro. And that's being launched in the marketplace here in Canada in 2024. Commercially, growers start to purchase that. So yeah, there's four proteins above, four below, essentially. And ourselves as a trait provider, Corteva's got a number of traits in their camp. Syngenta as well. Over the last, I would say at the start of my career, we had a lot of single traded proteins or single traded BT traits in the marketplace, and discovery work continues, is really continuous in R&D pipelines, but it's very difficult to find new proteins and bring them to market. So really the strategy has been, for the last 10, 15 years, is to combine those proteins into pyramid stacks. Hear that terminology thrown a lot around a lot. And really the motivation there is multiple effective modes of action. Exact same as you think about weed control and herbicide resistance. It's getting more than one unique mode of action at a targeted pest to increase its durability. So that's really been the focus. And as far as the number of traits in one trait package, our SmartStax Pro product would likely be the most complex trait in the marketplace, where you've got Cry 1F, Cry 1A, 105 above ground, and then you've got Cry 3BB1, which was our original rootworm trait, and then you've got Corteva's Cry 34, 35 combined below, plus our new RNAi. So if you look at that trait combination, there's a lot of proteins in that.
Covering a lot of pests.
Yeah, it's really designed to be the most comprehensive trait package in the market, and certainly when SmartStax was launched, oh gosh, started doing work on it in 2008, 2009. But yeah, when we first launched it, it really covered the full pest spectrum that we had in North America, and then Western Bean Cutworm came along, and we thought, well, maybe we'd get a bit of activity above ground, and I think we did a little bit the first couple of years. They'd take a bite and kind of walk away, but as pressure grew and they developed a taste for it, it really wasn't until Syngenta brought VIP3A to market. It's really focused in that Western Bean Cutworm. It's got a couple other pests, but that's really the main one that's in the marketplace. And yeah, we're able to combine that with our VT Double Pro trait and launched Trisept to the market a few years ago as well. So it is. If somebody's truly interested in this topic, go to the Canadian Corn Pest Coalition's websites, look up the BT table. It has every manufacturer's or supplier's trait package, all the brand names, the Cry proteins, what gets controlled, what doesn't get controlled. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
fairly complex, but
It's
you
a
can
lot
wrap.
to take in all at once, but it does have all of that information there, and I'll link that in the show notes as well for
For
easy
sure.
access. All right. So the next thing I want to address is kind of are all BT proteins created equal? When we're talking about certain ones target certain pests, just can you expand on that a little bit more and talk me through that a bit?
Yeah, for sure. And I think we covered this off a little bit already, that BT proteins are very specific. And quite honestly, when scientists, when ourselves, other companies look at what pests impact corn, other crops, I mean, cotton also has lots of BT proteins in it. Actually, in South America, there's some lepidopteran pests that impact soybeans. So there's BT soybeans in South America as well.
Oh, cool.
Last number of years, I think Intact is the brand name we have. But yeah, same proteins, similar proteins get used in those other crops. So it's not just corn. But yeah, I mean, it really, protein is targeted towards a specific pest. You know, our first one back in the late 90s was Cry1AB. Mm-hmm. That was truly a European corn borer focused product. Cry1F, one of the first ones out of the, you know, little Dow DuPont, Corteva now.
Mm-hmm.
Cry1F really focused at that European corn borer. Viptera, one of the latest above ground traits in the marketplace. Actually been around for a number of years now, but you know, it's claimed to fame. It picks up some armyworm control, but for us anyway, it's western bean.
Yeah,
it's the only protein in the market that that controls that, and it controls some other cutworm species as well. So yeah, and then below ground, I mean, all of them are targeted that corn rootworm. That's mm-hmm. really the main game in town, below ground. So you know, you could say that all the below ground traits are after the same pest. Certainly there are differences, subtle differences in how efficacious they are. Obviously, as a provider of traits, our traits are better than everybody else's. Say that, but realistically, you know, each has its strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, companies, you know, cross licensing agreements, just try to do our best to combine to bring the most comprehensive package to market. And
yeah,
when you get into the integration process, and I don't know a lot about it, but I've seen enough over the years, when you test different trait versions of similar genetics, it does change how that hybrid performs a little bit, and mm-hmm. it can challenge. And I think that's where we spend a lot of time, is making sure that those integration insertions of that trait in the inbreds really helps to maximize the performance of those genetics. And that's really where the art comes in.
Mm.
And where you do potentially see some efficacy differences, you know, where those proteins are, how much they're expressed. I mean, when we spent a lot of time the last few years around corn rootworm, you know, we do see efficacy differences based on damage scores between traits.
Okay.
It's easier to see for rootworm. I mean, above ground, we've controlled European corn borer 100%, where corn
rootworm. For a long time.
For a long time, right? But corn rootworm traits, you know, we don't kill all of that pest.
Right.
And certainly it's helped lead to resistance development, is the low dose aspect of rootworm traits. You know, allows them to feed a little bit more, and
mm-hmm.
our newest technology is helping to morph that into a high kill scenario. But yeah, mm-hmm. I guess long and short of it is, they're not created equal. They target different pests. You know, I think it, for corn growers at least, guaranteed European corn borer in your geography anyway. European corn mm-hmm. borer, corn earworm, western bean cutworm, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Control those three, you're doing a great job. So
yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah, for sure.
So when we're looking at the actual corn plant itself, is there a difference in like the concentration of the BT protein throughout the plant, and does that change throughout the season?
Yeah, that's a great question, and this is one I lobbed over to our some folks in the U.S. that are more familiar with the, you know, the deep science behind
mm-hmm.
proteins. And yeah, his feedback was, his short answer is, they do express differently in different parts of the plants
mm-hmm.
by design, right? You know, really where the insects feed, where they really spend most of their time, the stalk, the leaves, the ear, you know, those elevations be slightly elevated where, or, yeah, levels will be slightly elevated where pollen, yeah, probably not going to express as much in pollen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as far as their maintain their longevity throughout the season, they certainly do. But to quantify the variety, the hybrid by environment interactions, by protein expression, you know, that's virtually impossible to do. You know, we've tried doing some of it, but it's virtually impossible. But protein concentrations that the plant produces are magnitudes higher than is required to control an insect. So, you know, even if it's not 100% equal throughout the plant, there's going to be more than enough protein there. If they take a bite, you know, the bottom 6 inches of the stalk or at the top in the ear, they should still die.
So when it comes to resistance management, we talked about the more comprehensive packages with multiple traits in them that are targeting different things and multiple proteins to target a single pest. So when it comes to resistance management, are more traits always better? And can you comment on that from a situation where we don't have resistance and versus a situation where we are seeing some resistance issues?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, when companies started developing these pyramid stacks, you know, we weren't dealing as much with below ground resistance. You know, mm-hmm. challenges we're seeing in the Maritimes, other parts of Canada with Cryo 1F, Cryo 1AB, you know, those are more recent. And I would say,
yeah,
you know, my opinion of that question is yes, more traits are better, you know, mm-hmm. similar to herbicides where you can stack a group 5 with a group 27 with a group 15 with a, where you can stack multiple effective modes of action to target a single pest. You know, when we look at Tricepta, our above ground trait package, we've got 3 proteins for corn borer, 3 that cover earworm, 3 that cover army worm. You know, Western bean cutworm gets pulled in with the Viptera trait. So
mm-hmm.
when you look at that trait package versus a single trait, you know, Cryo 1AB, the old yield guard trait back in the late 90s, it is more durable. There's no question about it.
For sure.
And if you're in a region where we don't see resistance developing and there's quick adoption of those pyramided traits, you know, durability, longevity really increases. But certainly, yeah, I think in the case of the Maritimes where, you know, the single traded events stuck in the marketplace a little bit longer than they did elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think purely based on the maturity and the ability of companies to get material and hybrid suited for those regions fast enough,
mm-hmm.
we have seen breakdown of Cryo 1F, Cryo 1AB identified this past spring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, yeah, you start striking out proteins from those combinations and you're certainly at more risk. But, you know, just because the pest has developed a taste for BT protein doesn't mean it still doesn't have some activity, right?
Right.
And certainly what what I've noticed when we're out there this past summer looking at things is, yeah, if you find feeding in a traded product, you know, chances are that pest is or insect is has some, you know, reduced growth, death, mm-hmm. you know, it's eating more than it should, but it still dies. So it depends on where on that spectrum you are from a resistance standpoint. And it's the same for glyphosate resistant weeds. You know, if they're
for multiple
copy numbers of these, the EPSPS enzyme, you know, if it's metabolic resistance, resistance is a very complex.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, certainly, you know, we've done our best as an industry to pyramid with the, you know, I would say limited tools we have. And you know, durability is certainly much stronger when all of those proteins can work together.
For sure. Yeah, and I guess my opinion is just that if a producer knows exactly what is in their corn trait package, and so then if they do run into a situation where they're seeing damage from one of these pests, And they can look at their corn trait package and say, oh, I really shouldn't be seeing that. Or, oh, okay, well, that's not really being targeted here. So that's why that's happening. I think that's the important thing, I guess, from a producer standpoint.
I think the best thing growers can do is spend time in the Canadian Corn Pest Coalition, understand the different proteins, the different commercial names for products, and be educated. Ask your seed salesperson, am I buying a Roundup Ready hybrid, a conventional hybrid with no traits at all? Is it above ground? Is it below ground? Is it both?
No, absolutely. There's so many factors that go into deciding on a corn hybrid. So this is just one slice of that.
Yeah, I mean, test weight, yield potential, disease. Yeah, there's so much. I honestly, as a farmer myself, the biggest thing I stress about every year is picking the right hybrids and varieties to grow next year, based on experience in the field, what I grew last year, what's going performing well in the neighborhood. Yeah, it's spend a lot of time stressing about it for sure.
So can you talk a little bit about the importance of refuge in a bag or the integrated refuge for resistance management?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I guess a bit of background on that. When we had only single traded products in the market, it was a 20% structured refuge within, I think it was within 400 meters of your traded product. And when I started with Monsanto back in the day as a summer student, we spent our summers auditing growers for where's your refuge, scouting, counting insect damage from corn borer. And what we found is, I bought some seed from your competitor or from another dealer, and yes, I planted it, and that's my refuge, right? Once growers saw the efficacy, saw the significant yield gains, the better harvest ability, better quality, getting growers to plant refuge, and I no blame to anybody.
Yeah, no, it's a tough sell.
It's a tough sell, right? So I think once we went to the pyramided trait stacks, that was a big push, and one of the biggest focuses of my career early on was to develop the efficacy story, grower confidence. And I think refuge in a bag has band-aided refuge in every field, in every situation.
Made it easy.
Unless a grower opens a bag up and picks out the odd, 5%, 10%, whatever the blend is, the odd color, and throws them in the garbage, which nobody has time to do.
No.
It's guaranteed refuge. And certainly there's always the discussion, well, is it as good as 20%? I said, I think proof is in the pudding, is it forces growers to have refuge on the farm where before it was sometimes a struggle. I haven't spent a lot of time in the southern US, but where you have cotton overlapping with corn, both those crops, same pest issues, same proteins, still mandate a structured refuge percentage of their acres need to be refuge. Refuge compliance is always a challenge. And it's impossible to police or keep your finger on because growers have so many options of who they buy from and what they buy. And I think one of the best things that happened to the industry was refuge in a bag, for sure.
Absolutely. No, it just makes it so much simpler for everybody. So the corn seed companies and the people who own and license these traits are really involved in resistance management and monitoring. So can you talk about that involvement a little bit?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, I mentioned the experiences of summer student back in the day, refuge. We've supported academics to run sentinel plots for below ground, above ground, and stewardship audits, making sure that in our fine print on the seed tag, on your technology use guides, those stewardship messages, practices are all clearly laid out because we all read our technology use guides or whatever they're called now every spring before we plant a crop.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, from a rootworm standpoint, I know Jocelyn has had many years of, sentinel plots with that pest. The last few years where we have seen rootworm populations pop up and have had issues, we certainly work with those growers, encourage them to rotate, work with good folks at University of Guelph to collect populations, do the screen, the bio assays to see where things are at. And yeah, as a trait provider in the marketplace, we're very aware and active in the space, and very transparent, I think, is the biggest thing. And this past season, in the Maritimes, Quebec, Manitoba, once the Cry1F, Cry1AB was made clear to me and others this past winter, was, not that we weren't taking the Cry1F challenges, to heart. It was, we got a problem, need to get after it. And yeah, we enlisted AgCol this year. We targeted 10% of our traded corn acres in the Maritimes, and I think we came in just over 100 fields or 120 fields or something in that neighborhood countrywide. And I expect that program to continue, especially with what's come up in the Maritimes. We need to have a better handle on where this pest is, density, does it have an appetite for traded products or not? So it's, yeah, funding sentinel plot programs, funding research, I think there's going to be a lot. I know there's going to be a lot of activity again around European corn borer, which, 30 years, 25 years, or whatever, it's
Been a good
100%
run.
been a good run. 25 years, whatever it's been, perfect control. And yeah, research on the pest drops off. Pest populations aren't easy to find anymore. It's similar to when Roundup Ready crops were introduced to the
For
market.
sure.
Took the market by storm. It was easy to use. And then you start running into challenges, and growers need to mix in other products. I think we're in the same spot with insects, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good analogy to kind of relate the two, because we all understand what's going on with Roundup resistant weeds and some of the challenges there. So just applying that to this European corn borer situation
And
makes sense.
with any pest, it's impossible to eliminate once it's developed, but understanding where it is, helping growers to manage it, awareness. Yeah, I think that's all activities that we're going to be very busy with for a number of years. So.
So I think kind of the last thing I want to touch on is when new technology is coming out, new trait packages and things like that. In the past, certainly they haven't been as available in the low heat unit varieties that we tend to grow out here. So for example, like Tricepta, which was one of your guys's packages, starts at 27, 25 heat units. And that's higher than what we're what we want to grow out here for sure. So what's the outlook on that going forward? Whether that's, I mean, it makes sense why that would happen. But what's the outlook on that going forward, having some of those newer traits come to the lower heat units maybe more quickly?
Yeah, for sure. And this is feedback we give our breeding group, biotech group, regularly. Resources are allocated based on market size, for sure.
For
And
sure.
earlier the market, the less acres there are. But we are pushing as a commercial business here to get more focus. And actually, we just went through our corn advancement process last week, and there's an 82-day Tricepta that popped out.
Oh,
So
awesome.
you will potentially see that in the marketplace in a couple seasons once we, make sure it's a good commercial hybrid. And yeah, we took it. So we are seeing that develop. Smart Stacks, we're down 82, 83 day now. That limit before was really 87, 88. We launched an 85 a couple of years ago. There's possibilities for some earlier stuff. And yeah, there's that is always a focus. And yeah, we are very loud as a commercial business, and I do expect more availability of traits like Tricepta, SmartStax Pro. We've got a new trait that was launched in the US this past season, and we plan to launch it in 2025 for 2025 planting, is VT4 Pro, where you take Tricepta above ground, and we have Cry3BB1 and DSF SNF7 is the RNAi components below ground. So, you know, you'll hear us talking a bit about that this summer, where you're going to get a full package above ground plus good rootworm protection below, which, you know, I think for your geography, if we can get there for maturity, is going to be an awesome product for those dairy farmers.
Definitely.
So, it's certainly, you know, there's only so many resources, R&D space.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not shy to be vocal for our customers' needs. And really, that's one of my biggest roles, is making sure our customer needs are filtered back through to R&D and work with our marketing product management folks to make sure that that message is clear. So,
That's
may not awesome. Be as fast as we want it to or growers want it to, but yeah.
But it'll get there.
we're pushing for sure.
Yeah, for sure. No, well, we'll look forward to seeing some of those hybrids in with the new technology in like our maritime variety test.
Yeah.
In the future and hopefully in our fields soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess just to wrap up, anything that producers should consider when they are choosing their hybrids for next year?
Yeah, I would say, you know, if you still have corn standing, if you haven't harvested yet, go and look. Walk those rows. See what's going on. You know, are you seeing Western bean cutworm feeding? Are you seeing corn borer? You know, are things fairly clean? You know, pay attention to the traits. Every trait, every agronomic chart that I've seen in any company seed guide has trait listed right beside or right near the variety.
Yeah.
You know, if you're unclear, ask your seed seller. Go to look for resources, Canadian Corn Pest Coalition. Just understand what you're buying. But yeah, I mean, insect tolerance, disease package, yield potential, silage fit, silage quality.
Yeah, we said before, there's so many factors to consider. But just understanding what you have, what you're buying is the most important thing.
For sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my favorite expressions is always Mother Nature will always adapt and survive whatever we throw at it. You know, European corn borer is just another example of that. And we have to be smart with the use of any technology, herbicides, fungicides, seed treatments, traits, you know, because the R&D pipelines, yes, we've had a pretty robust and good run the last 25, 30 years from all providers, but it's pretty darn difficult to get to find new discoveries and get them to marketplace, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
We got to use the tools that we have at our disposal effectively and try to maintain their longevity in the marketplace. So
yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much. I think we've covered a lot of ground here and a lot of really great information. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's always exciting. And yeah, seed sales season is upon us. And yeah, hybrid selections, all that stuff needs to happen. And yeah, it's all fun. So
yeah, definitely.
Cool. No, I appreciate you asking me to participate. And yeah, certainly if there are any questions that come up with this one, please reach out, and I'm happy to have a conversation.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to this episode of Outstanding in the Field. You can check out the Canadian Corn Pest Coalition BT trait table at the link in the show notes or by visiting cornpest.ca. Follow us on social media at NS Perennia and subscribe to the podcast to stay up to date on future episodes. Thanks to Perennia for supporting this podcast and Rachel Oxner from our marketing and communications team for podcast production.